This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
Now listen to this.
You are listening to AWOL Radio on CKMS The Sound 100.3 FM in Waterloo. We are also podcasting on the Rabble Podcast Network at rabble.ca, and you can find AWOL on the web at peaceculture.org.
Listening to 100.3 Sound FM. This is AWOL Radio, Smash the State Report. It's Friday, March 8th. It is International Women's Day. And we got a show for you here on AWOL Radio. You've been listening to a whole selection of kind of radical femme podcasts on Sound FM over the afternoon. And we're going to get into the Smash the State Report now. And hopping into a little G20 update we talked about a couple weeks ago. Well, here's a little update on Joel Bitar. He battles Canada. Now, this is from Alternet. New York activist faces unprecedented extradition over G20 protests. The activist, taken from his home on Valentine's Day to face extradition to Canada, isn't going down without a fight. Joel Bitar will never forget this Valentine's Day. While New York City was waiting for the sun to rise, Bitar was being led downtown from his family's apartment by 8 federal marshals who seized him on a provisional arrest warrant from the Canadian government by way of the U.S. Attorney's Office. Overnight, he had officially become an American fugitive. In his bail hearing on February 19th, which was delayed because of an outbreak of lice in the federal prison where Bitar and other prisoners were held, the assistant U.S. attorney revealed that there were 26 charges in the complaint against Bitar. The charges related to property destruction and stemmed from his involvement in the G20 protests, which occurred in Toronto on June 26, 27, 2010, and the whole week before that. Quote, back around the time that events were unfolding shortly after the G20, recalls Martin Stoller, Bitar's former attorney, there was lots of newspaper publicity about the fact that there were 3 Americans who Canadian authorities wanted to arrest and charged with various property crimes that had occurred during the demonstrations. Joel was identified as one of the people they wanted to charge, unquote. One report in the Toronto Star from December 2010 quotes the lead investigator, Detective Sergeant Giroux, saying, quote, these people may think they have gotten away scot-free, but they won't. In that article, it was revealed that the team was searching for 3 suspects, 2 of them who lived in New York and 1 from New Hampshire. During the G20 demonstrations, which brought thousands of activists together from across the world, Bitar was arrested with 1,100 other people in the largest mass arrest in Canadian history. The G20, or the Group of 20 Finance Ministers and the Central Bank Governors, is an economic and political affiliation of nation-states whose economies account for about 80% of the world's gross world product and about 80% of world trade. Since 2008, it has become the main economic council of wealthy countries, and since its inception, the G20 has been under fire for being a group of powerful people who make critical economic and political decisions in secret, accountable to no one. At Bitar's bail hearing, the U.S. assistant attorney also revealed that the process of extraditing him began in October 2011 when Canada formally filed its complaint. From there, Canadian authorities spent almost a year reviewing their evidence, going over footage and Facebook posts that Bitar is alleged to have made during the demonstrations. In October 2012, they submitted a request to the U.S. Embassy for his extradition. In a striking move, he was given bail. $500,000 bail, it's the highest of any of the G20 arrestees. And it goes on, well, he is fighting these charges, of course. Although there is no precedent for extraditing someone from U.S. to Canada for property destruction charges, Will Potter points out an important example of the reverse. Quote, it happened in a pretty high-profile case involving Trey Arrow, an environmental activist who fought for years against extradition from Canada to the U.S., where he would face arson charges related to property destruction in 2001. He finally gave up that fight and voluntarily went to Eugene, Oregon. That was significant because of how much the U.S. was pushing for his extradition to face charges where he was branded as a terrorist. Well, Bitar's just being called a threat to Canadian citizen safety. and diplomatic relations. So while Canada's request to extradite Joel Bitar comes at a decisive moment in the U.S. and Canadian diplomatic relations. Newly appointed Secretary of State John Kerry made his first international trip to Canada in early February to talk relations, and at the top of the agenda was the Keystone XL pipeline. It is unclear what his recommendations were following that meeting. The stakes are high. In a recent article on the risks President Obama faces in making a decision about the pipeline, the authors underscored the importance of the U.S. decision for future harmony of the two countries moving forward. Portending the ominous, the authors write, Canada's leaders have made it clear that an American rejection would be viewed as an unneighborly act and could bring retaliation. Don't expect Canada to declare war on the U.S., but expect the retaliation to be more subtle. A rejection could influence future decisions on the purchase of American F-35 fighter jets and other trade and border matters. I think this article is getting a little too deep into this Joel Bitar extradition. Bitar's case finally falls into the last court category of border matters. There is a sense that if the U.S. does not appease Canada in this case, it could retaliate by refusing to extradite an alleged criminal, a future Trey Arrow, to the U.S. And it goes on and on from there. Well, as Bitar fights his extradition, he's not going down without a fight. We'll see what happens as time goes on. And check out supportjoel.com for more on that. And following up with more extradition news, an American alleged by police to be the most active known protester at the G20 riots remains in custody after his extradition to Canada. Kevin Shinella of Queens, New York, has been charged with 53 counts related to the riots. He is alleged to have smashed the windows of a police car with the officer still inside during the June 2010 summit. Toronto Police Detective Sergeant Gary Giroux said Shinella allegedly caused at least $300,000 in damage. Quote, nobody else even comes close to that number, he said. Shinella appeared briefly in a Toronto court Wednesday, but his bail hearing was postponed to Thursday while he awaits a surety. A second man, Richard Dean Moreno, 22, of Lackawanna, Pennsylvania, stood silently during his hearing as he was released on $80,000 bail. His mother and sister were in the courthouse, but declined to comment. Giroux noted Moreno is alleged to have caused more than $100,000 in damage at the G20. Moreno faces 14 charges, including 6 counts of mischief, over 5,000, 3 counts of mischief endangering life, and assaulting a police officer with a weapon. Giroux said U.S. Marshals transported Moreno and Shinella, who did not fight their extradition, to Philadelphia, where they were met by 4 Toronto police officers for their flight here on Tuesday. Last week, Boston architect Quinn McCormick voluntarily returned to Canada to face his G20-related charges, and 2 Americans are still wanted by Canadian authorities. Dane Rossman is in custody in Tucson, Arizona, and Joel Bitar is fighting his extradition in New York later on in March. And that was from the Toronto Star. So 5 Americans are being... They're being chased down by Canadian authorities for alleged property destruction crimes. And what they're alleging, I mean, these guys are responsible for $300,000, another guy for $800,000, Joel for $500,000. How much damage was done? I recognize that a lot of windows got broken, but they can't charge like 6 people for breaking the same window. If someone's already been found guilty of breaking the window, you can't find someone else guilty of breaking the same window. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's window breaking for Pete's sake. ConscienceCanada.ca. Promote peace. Stop paying for war. We thought we'd give you a little tax season tip. The reason for the existence of ConscienceCanada.ca. For many of us, it is not enough to avoid personal military service because we know that funds taken from us in the form of tax will be used for war and other violent purposes. In other words, we know that we will be made complicit in war through our taxes, no matter what our beliefs and values might be. As conscientious objectors, we want to know that that all funds that we turn over to the government will be used only for peaceful purposes. We therefore call ourselves conscientious objectors to military taxation. Conscience Canada has worked since 1978 to promote and change in law to allow all Canadians the right to conscientiously object to military taxation as a right of conscience guaranteed in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. To educate Canadians about freedom of conscience and conscientious objection to military taxation. to support conscientious objection to military taxation, and to defend freedom of conscience. Check it out. I would just avoid paying taxes altogether. But if you can't, maybe keep some of your taxes away, the taxes that they want to put towards, say, F-35 fighter jets, or new submarines, or missiles, or helicopters, or whatever military technologies they want to put tax dollars towards. And I mean, that goes right down to the local level. Looking at our budget, again, looking at our Waterloo regional budget, one-third of the average tax bill. So the average tax bill in Waterloo Region is about $1,700. Around one-third of that, $1,700 of each person's tax bill, goes towards police services. Now, public housing and community services get, you know, way, 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 way less funding than that. Even public transport gets less funding than that. Police services is, more than twice the next closest thing in the budget line. I don't understand how police services can possibly take so much, and yet they still have the problems of police officers assaulting people, police officers in Waterloo Region caught up in drug operations, and not the kind where they're trying to catch people, where they're selling drugs, probably the drugs that they took off of people that they threw in jail. Now, you know, there's been a lot of reporting on that, on AWOL Radio, on Grand River Radical Radio, and even on the mainstream channels about what the Waterloo Regional Police has been up to in the last few months in terms of their members breaking the law. Well, you know, why don't we have conscientious objection locally? Let's stop paying for violent police squads with our tax bills. Let's make sure our tax bills go towards public services. Let's see, you know, public services that help people, not that target youth, not that target people of color, not that target the people in the downtown, or homeless people. Well, what we need to do is promote social housing, to promote social services. I mean, we don't have social housing, and I know on Radio Basics last week, they had a whole discussion about the lack of social housing in this region. And I mean, it's true. You don't see any of these new condo developments. None of them have like social housing requirements. Let's have that kind of subsidy. That's where our budget money should be going. That's where our municipal budget should be going. The federal, this Conscience Canada, to keep your tax dollars from going towards military funding, fantastic idea. Let's keep that rolling. That's a great idea. I mean, also, I guess some people might go along the lines of voting for parties that are against war, because then we wouldn't be paying for war. But, you know, not everybody is into that, or into voting, even. Because, you know, I don't know if any of the parties right now are actually, like, I guess the Green Party might be anti-war. Well, we'll see in the next election and all that. Until then, stop paying tax. At least stop paying tax for war. We can take a little break here. Say, well, radio, smash a state report. We're going to a tune. Let's go to something from Propagandhi, from their newest album. I play a lot of Propagandhi, don't I? I sure do. It's great. Note to self from Propagandhi. AWOL Radio. Thank you.
blacklist. No muckraking journalist left to take stock of the wholesale omission of outside perspectives. How does it make you feel to know that you voted for this?
AWOL Radio here on 100.3 Sound FM. It's 4:47 on Friday, March 8th, 2013. And one from the Toronto Media Co-op. I know we covered it on grandrivermc.ca this morning, but whatever. Animal rights activists protest Little Ray's Reptile Zoo. Koala exposes animal abuse at Little Ray's Reptile Prison. And this is a press release. Today, Saturday, March 2nd, 2013, several members of Koala, the Kitchener, Ontario Animal Liberation Alliance, attended a demonstration opposing animal abuse at Little Ray's Traveling Reptile Zoo. The event was held from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Binghamton's Conference Center in Kitchener, Ontario. The zoo, based in Ottawa, is touring Ontario and features reptiles, birds of prey, and a lynx, which with live shows where patrons can view and touch the animals. Kitchener residents and koala members arrived at Binghamton's but were promptly asked to leave the property by staff. A picket was set up by the Binghamton's entrance on Center Drive. Demonstrators held signs that read slogans like "No cages, no chains," and "Zoos are cruel." One demonstrator, disguised as a parking attendant, handed out literature to hundreds of motorists, highlighting examples of cruelty found at zoos, as well as flyers listing genuine animal sanctuaries located in Ontario. Several drivers leaving the event stopped to give their support. One zoo patron was quoted as saying, "The zoo was horrible. It was advertised as an animal rescue, but the conditions were horrid. They had an alligator sitting in the middle of the floor with its mouth duct taped shut so that people could pet her. What's educational about that? A lot of families were leaving right away after seeing how terrible this place was," unquote. Demonstrators echoed the sentiment, with one resident saying, quote, "This zoo is marketed as educational and promoting wildlife conservation, but the reality is it's just a traveling sideshow, no better than a circus. The animals are stressed out from overhandling and constant traveling. There is nothing educational about people gawking at captive animals in tiny aquariums. These animals are denied their freedom for our entertainment. Their needs should come before our amusements. Zoos only perpetuate the ideology that animals are ours to do with as we please. Animals are not our property, and they should be respected, not put on display for profit." Unquote. Despite being harassed several times by a Binghamton's employee who threatened to have everyone arrested, the demonstrations concluded peacefully. For more info on that, check out groupinfo.koala@gmail.com. And going from animal rights to men's rights? What? Rabble.ca's Michael Axer writes, "Guess what's coming to U of T? The men's rights movement. Janice Fiamengo and Paula Lamb." Oh. The Canadian Association for Equality, or CAF, is back in action on the University of Toronto's campus through its campus men's rights awareness group. CAF, as I have previously outlined, is an umbrella group for a variety of MRA subgroups, many targeting university students that claim to be about fairness and equality, while promulgating a variety of falsehoods and inaccuracies that seek to both undermine feminism and also to perpetuate their reactionary ideological myth that men also face systemic injustice and discrimination. They describe this as misandry, which they posit as a counterpoint to misogyny. However, CAF, unlike most of its American counterparts, is always sure to point on a face of openness and tolerance to mask their agenda. Back in November, CAF hosted an event at which Warren Farrell, a guru of the MRA, spoke. This was protested by student activists, a protest at which the activists attempted to block access to the event, which led to some arrests. It has also led to a subsequent campaign of vicious and obscene intimidation specifically targeting female anti-MRA U of T student activists by the US-based misogynist hate site, A Voice for Men. Information about this campaign was posted on the CAF website despite their outward claims of not being associated with A Voice for Men, and details of the protests as well as the subsequent actions by A Voice for Men can be found in an article that Michael wrote for Rabble back in December. Now, CAF's U of T branch is hosting another speaker, a speaker whose rejection of the social progress that society has made to redress centuries of injustice and discrimination goes well beyond her attacks on feminism. Janice Fiamengo, an English professor at the University of Ottawa, was proudly announced by CAF to be the latest addition to their advisory committee on January 5th. Not long afterward, CAF announced that she would be speaking at their next on-campus event to be held Thursday, March 7th. What's Wrong with Women's Studies, Academic Censorship, Feminism, and Men? CAF describes the event in this way. Dr. Janice Fiamengo, University of Ottawa, professor, discusses the problems of academic feminism at Canadian universities, dubious scholarship, indoctrination, dogmatic teaching approaches, limitations on free speech, effects of equity hiring, and the consequences for men in the humanities. According to CAF, the University of Toronto has kindly offered us complimentary use of one of their beautiful theater venues. In a recent Metro News article, we find Fiamengo In her upcoming talk, Fia Mengel will say that feminism has changed from the pursuit of equality to the pursuit of women's power. It became about women's power in certain areas, and it came to represent men in very negative ways, as oppressive, as dominating, as violent, as discriminatory, as exclusionary, she said. Continuing, it became about women's victimization and their moral superiority as victims. Fame Mangold believes that feminism, through the influence of women's studies courses, has alienated young men in humanities courses. Quote, if I were a young man going through university, I couldn't bear to sit through course after course of drumming home that I am part of one half of the human race that is violent, responsible for the ills of the whole society, she said. In English, there are few and fewer young men, and I can certainly see why, unquote. Oh, that's hard to read, her silly words. Fia Mengel and the self-described moderate and inclusive CAF are seeking to redress a new injustice. Interesting and tellingly, the same article includes an interview with an activist who was clearly and understandably being intimidated by the actions of the men's rights movement after the November protest. The article, quoting, Heather, a feminist and a social justice advocate, says at least one of those young women has been exposed to online bullying and harassment. For that reason, she doesn't want to see the Janice Flamingo talk go forward. However, she doesn't know if she will take place in any kind of protest because she fears the backlash. Heather, who asked her last name to be withheld because she doesn't want to become a target for harassment, said she doesn't think a talk criticizing women's studies belongs at the University of Toronto. Heather may be right. In fact, the gutless Texan thug Paul Elam had this to say about the upcoming event. University of Toronto Student Union, it's time for you to just shut up, get out of the way, and let other people share ideas, whether you like them or not. Of course, it is up to you. You live in a free country as long as people like you are not running it. But whatever you choose to do, you might want to consider what happened to you last time you had a bright idea. And last November, we were not even prepared for anything to happen. You can bet we are now. Well, subtlety is not his strong suit. Given that we cannot possibly include him as he is in Texas, one can only assume he is talking through his brothers in Canada, namely CAF and the U of T Men's Rights Group. Given that they did not disavow his previous campaign and intimidation, they are unlikely to disavow this one. I wonder if the U of T administration sees this as just more free speech. But it would seem, returning to Fia Mengel, that anti-feminism is not her first attempt to strike at the politics of modernity and inclusion, and it would seem that there are other reasons that many might doubt the legitimacy of a campus club that, while claiming to be moderate and inclusive, would have her as a speaker and advisor. CAF's newest front person is an outright reactionary and Islamophobe who is rising through the ranks of the extreme right online community by writing for hard-right American websites and espousing obviously extremist right views. In fact, the most recent article she posted on February 25, Fia Mengel, who is, one might add, notably obsessed with and largely only published in the United States, with its Fox News, talk, radio, ultra-right subculture, led in with, here's her recent article, proclaiming himself a conciliator and a moderate with a vision of the Americas standing with each other and paying their fair share, President Barack Obama is in fact one of the most partisan presidents ever to occupy the White House. Fine-sounding words notwithstanding, he is a leftist ideologue and no-holds-barred political fighter whose practice has consistently been to demonize the American equivalents of the hated kulaks and petite bourgeois persecuted in the Soviet Union. Obama's enemies include those bitter people who cling to guns or religion or antipathy to people who aren't like them. As well as the presumably benighted bigots who failed to realize that the future must not belong to those who slandered the Prophet of Islam. With his anti-American neo-Marxist outlook shaped by mentors and heroes such as Frank Marshall Davis, Bill Ayers, Saul Alinsky, and Jeremiah Wright, Obama is naturally inclined to be suspicious of freedom and to feel sympathy for groups such as the Muslim Brotherhood. Wow. Reading Fia Mengel is just annoying. She is so filled with right-wing propagandist hate. Ugh. This is, to say the least, a fascinating way to characterize the President of the United States, a president who has, in fact, been astonishingly overtly aggressive, imperialistic, and violent in his ongoing extrajudicial war murdering people in the Middle East, including hundreds of innocent bystanders, without any pretense of trial or due process. To say that this would be the characterization that would be made by an extreme right zealot would be obvious. Fiamengo posted this as she has many other anti-Islamic articles on David Horowitz's notoriously bigoted frontpagemag.com, a website that promotes Horowitz's outright racist musings like those found in his joint diatribe Black Skin Privilege, which is promoted as showing that, in fact, the most insidious bias in our culture today is black skin privileged. Oh, man. It would seem that not only have women and feminists unjustly taken power, but so have blacks and other groups. Fiamengo is not at all shy about this, attacking Islamics directly and voraciously. And I can't read any more of her writing. Of course, she is writing of the right of the residents to defend their neighborhoods from mosques, places of worship. In an article decrying the supposed lack of free speech, she praises a bigot and others who would seek to deny freedom of speech to Islamics by denying them the very ability to build houses of worship. She then, as she is aiming at an American audience, goes on to condemn the notoriously left-wing Canadian Broadcasting Corporation for not taking up the case that she was talking about. And it goes on from there. Oh, well, and he writes it, Michael Laxer writes it in the article, one could go on and on. There are many more examples of her work that are readily available online, you just have to look them up. I've contended, as have others, that the so-called men's right movement is little more than a wing of a broader North American reactionary movement that uses false and grotesque arguments of reverse sexism, or misandry, and reverse racism to oppose efforts by historically oppressed communities to redress this oppression. They do so by claiming to be radical and fighting for justice and freedom of speech, when in fact they are nothing but a continuation of the same old racist and sexist counter-movements that have sought to keep things the way they are from the beginning of all the movements for social justice of the 19th and 20th centuries. These movements are interconnected. They all share the essential false analysis, and they are all equally lying when they claim that all they want is fairness. They are explicitly either racist, sexist, or retrograde. Often they are all of these. Crossover, backlash, reactionary, Fiamengo simply proves this. And, I mean, you can check out more and follow Michael Laxer as he continues to write on the so-called men's rights movement. I commented after a troll brought me into a comment, and I jumped on it. But I stand by it. Men don't need any more rights. We need to stand up. We need to do what Michael Laxer is doing. We need to do what other male allies are doing, and that is to call bullshit on the net and with our bodies, alongside women, against those who promote the so-called men's rights agenda. Men don't need any more rights, and we certainly don't need to put our energies into movements that protect our rights as supreme over the rights of others who are systematically targeted due to their so-called category. We need to start looking at the responsibility linked with the rights we already have. Try that one out. And thanks to Michael Laxer for continuing his coverage of this. We're going to go to another song here on AWOL Radio. And that song's going to be something from Byron. Byron, folk singer out of Guelph. Let's put a double from Byron. First, this is Toughest Punk Rock Girls in the World. And we'll get to another one. Thank you.
exploiting you and using your time. No, you should take all that you need, either from the shop or from the cash machine. Don't let them tell you how you need to act. Tell them you quit and never go back. Don't trust the boss and don't do what he said. This time will be over, soon come the day. If you ever run into a cop, kick him in the shins, run away, don't stop. Gotta get away so you can fight again another day. Come back tomorrow and blow them away. Pigs are just thugs, they're up to no good. Just causing shit in your neighborhood. Don't trust the cops and don't do what they say. Their time will be over, soon come the day. Go back to school, don't follow no teacher, don't follow no rules. No, you can learn outside of class. You don't need to pay, you don't need to pass. Don't trust the teachers or the knowledge they guard. If you really want to learn, get a library card. Don't trust the teachers, don't do what they say. Their time will be over, soon come the day. Singing this song, you might like the singing, you might hum along. But if you don't like the words that I say, well, that's fine by me, you can go your own way. Don't let me tell you how you need to be. Think for yourself and that's how you get free. Don't trust the singing, don't do what I say. My time will be over, soon come the day. My time will be over, soon come the day.
That was Byron, double set. One was toughest punk rock girls in the world. The other, don't trust the boss. Smash the Say Report here as we get into a little piece on the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Corporate Rights Pact meeting. It's coming to Vancouver in July. You know what that means. Learn about it.
Well, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, referred to as NAFTA on steroids. So while folks might not have heard of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a trade agreement involving 11 Pacific Rim countries, they have heard of free trade and how corporations have utilized past trade agreements to expand their rights and their ability to move labor freely, to ignore environmental protections, to basically expand their profits on the backs of communities. And we are now in the 16th round of negotiations of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The 18th round is happening in Canada, in Vancouver, in July. And it is an exciting opportunity for communities throughout Canada and the United States to mobilize. And we've been working on this for 3 years. And the Seattle victory in 99 showed that people coming out on the street can make a difference and can actually stop bad policy from moving forward. And we very much see Vancouver as an extension of that, that the Pacific Northwest is where trade agreements come to die. And that is something that our colleague at the Council of Canadians has said recently. So we want to continue that trend of solidarity on trade justice with allies in Canada, with the U.S., and allies also throughout Latin America and in Mexico. And so we are all gearing up with, obviously, groups here in Canada taking the lead. We want it to be creative. We want it to be joyful. We want it to be sharing what we want in our trade agreements, but being very clear that these corporate rights deals stop here. So when issues around fracking or putting any kind of constraints around extractive fuels, corporations utilize trade agreements to fight communities and the laws that communities have passed in the organizing efforts. So it's important that we get our trade agreements right, because it will impact all of the other issues that we are working on, from immigration reform to climate change to public health and safety, food labeling, public procurement. Educate yourself about the TPP and talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors, and hope to see you out on the streets in Vancouver.
And that was a piece from WashingtonFairTrade.org. That was Kristen Beefus talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Well, there's going to be a next round of meetings in July in Vancouver. Didn't they just have a riot? Anyways. From Rabble.ca, the posted up by Stuart True, the TPP is the most harmful trade deal ever for access to medicines, says Médecins Sans Frontières. The humanitarian organization Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, is calling on the U.S. government to revise its intellectual property demands in the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, or watch it become, quote, the most harmful trade deal ever for access to medicines in developing countries, unquote. TPP negotiations continue this week in Singapore, with Canada participating in the talks for the second time. Intellectual property rights will be discussed on 7 of the 8 days' worth of negotiations, showing it's important in the overall TPP agreement. But MSF warns the U.S. pharmaceutical IPR proposals, which are being resisted by most of the 10 non-U.S. TPP negotiating countries, quote, threaten to roll back internationally agreed public health safeguards and would put in place far-reaching monopoly protections that keep medicine prices high and out of reach of millions in the Asia-Pacific region, unquote. Quote, too many people already die needlessly because the medicines they need are too expensive or do not exist, and we cannot stand by as the Trans-Pacific Partnership threatens to further restrict access to medicines in developing countries, said Dr. Uni Karunakara, international president of MSF, in a media release this week. He continued, We are gravely concerned about countries like Thailand, where MSF started treating HIV/AIDS more than a decade ago, and then transitioned its program to local authorities with the confidence that they would be able to continue providing life-saving treatments. Now Thailand is on the cusp of joining a dangerous deal that could jeopardize its ability to maintain, let alone scale up, vital life-saving programs for its people, unquote. The other risk, says MSF, is that the TPP will create a precedent for future international trade agreements, granting the mostly U.S. and EU-based pharmaceutical industry, quote, a wide-ranging set of legal mechanisms designed to prolong monopoly protections for medicines and delay the availability of more affordable generic versions, unquote. The organization says the U.S. intellectual property proposals of the TPP would force governments to grant new 20-year patents for modifications to existing medicines, including new forms, new uses of an older drug, or new therapeutic methods. Would also make it more expensive or cumbersome to challenge undeserved or invalid patents. Add years to existing patents to compensate for administrative delays in bringing drugs to market. Meanwhile, says this week's MSF press release, provisions in the proposed investment chapter would give pharmaceutical companies right to sue governments for instituting any regulation that reduces their expected profits, using private tribunals that circumvent a country's judicial process. U.S. pharmaceutical company Eli Lilly is using similar provisions in NAFTA to demand $100 million from the Canadian government for invalidating one of its patents, claiming, among other things, that the company's expected profits were expropriated when the patents were overturned. Many but not all of those demands of TPP countries are the same as the EU's demands of Canada in the ongoing Canada-EU Comprehensive Trade and comprehensive economic and trade agreement. In fact, intellectual property rights for pharmaceutical products is one of the major sticking points in the CETA negotiations because the EU proposals are guaranteed to increase the cost of public and private drug plans in Canada and make the introduction of any national or provincial pharmacare plan much more difficult. You can read the MSF report, Treading Away Health, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, on the webpage msfaccess.org. And to demand Harper government take intellectual property off the table in the CETA negotiations, use the Canadian Health Coalition Action Alert up on healthcoalition.ca. And I guess, well, sometimes if you can't beat 'em, reform 'em. I'm going to send this letter along. And, well, that's it. So AWOL Radio, Smash the State Report here on AWOL Radio, CKMS 100.3. Check out AWOL on the web, grandrivermc.ca, also on the Rabble Podcast Network. We might rebuild peaceculture.org at some point as well. But check out the Daily GER for your daily critical Canadian news coverage. And we're going to a final song, and then you'll hear lots more audio. Think some more Emma Goldman's on the table today. So, AWOL Radio tuning off, or your live host is leaving you, with a song from the Tra-La-Las. Let's do a double hit. First is Policeman, then Penelope. Here it is.
Why are you watching me all the time? Policeman, stop your power trippin', 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 trippin'. Policeman, get off my back, oh why are you watching me all the time? Policeman, stop your power trippin', 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 trippin'. You say that you serve and protect. Well, I say you don't care for my neck or anyone who disagrees with the state. I thought that we should question democracy if we even believe that it exists in this country. Policemen, get off my back, oh, why are you watching me all the time? Policemen, stop your power trippin', 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 trippin'. Policemen, get off my back, oh, why are you watching me all the time? Policemen, stop your power trippin', 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 trippin'. If I want to take to the streets to take a stand, stand up and speak, that's my right, and it's not criminal. How about you stop protecting me with the no more guns, no truncheons, instead of shielding corporate aristocracy? Policemen, get off my back, oh why are you watching me all the time? Policemen, stop your power trippin', 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 trippin'. Policemen, get off my back, oh why are you watching me all the time? Policemen, stop your power trippin', 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 trippin'. A police state is where I live, no matter what you might think. Any dissent and you get arrested. A police state is where I live, no matter what you may not know. Any dissent and you get arrested. You have the right to remain silent. 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 My community doesn't want guns on the streets. My community doesn't want thugs riots on the streets. My community is living in peace. Why are you disrupting, disrupting? My community wants to be questioning. My community wants to progress. My community doesn't want the police to force us to remain silent. 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 Policemen, get off my back. Oh, why are you watching me all the time? Policemen, stop your power trippin', 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 trippin'. Policemen, get off my back. Oh, why are you watching me all the time? Policemen, stop your power trippin', 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 trippin'. Trippin', trippin', trippin'.